Welcome to the My Money Podcast, number 109, from helpmetosave.com. I'm Karen Bryan, the editor of the Help Me To Save website, where you'll find tips to help you save money, spend less, and enjoy life. In this edition of the My Money Podcast, I'll discuss four recent articles from the Help Me To Save website. They are why I'm looking into starting another pension, the reasons why I think the 0% rate of income tax on savings is unfair, the massive variations on savings on Expedia Secret Savers hotels, and Halifax is paying a £125 switching bonus to existing and new current account customers. So starting off with why I'm looking at starting another personal pension. Now, I really thought that after buying my annuity following my 55th birthday in spring last year, I was finished with personal pensions. However, the new pension freedoms to access your pension pot, due to start on the 6th of April 2015, have got me thinking about starting a new pension. I need to pay another 4 years' national insurance contributions from April 2015 in order to make up the 35 years required to be eligible for a full state pension. If I work and pay Class 2 national insurance payments for the next 4 years, that takes me to the age of 60. Now, there is an option to pay voluntary national insurance contributions to make up any missing years, but they cost an awful lot more than the Class 2 national insurance contributions for the self-employed. I think it would save me, £500 or £600 a year to be self-employed and pay Class 2 national insurance rather than do the voluntary payments. Now, assuming that I do keep working in self-employment or find another job until I'm 60 and have then paid enough to get my full state pension, I still have 6 years to wait before I'll receive my UK state pension. If by the age of 60 I want to stop work and have built up a small pension pot over the next 4 years, I could use that pension pot to top up my annuity income for that 6 year gap. As my annuity is quite small, I could have an additional income of a few thousand pounds from the pension pot without having to pay any income tax on it. If I don't take the 25% tax-free lump sum from the new pension pot when I start to take the pension, then each withdrawal I make, you can get 25% tax-free. So you can either go to get the lump sum all in one or use it for each bit you take out. Depends on your circumstance, what you want to do. As ever, part of the attraction of starting another pension is the tax relief on the contributions. You get, well, I'm a basic rate taxpayer, so I would get 20% tax relief on any pension contributions. However, I need to weigh up that tax relief against the charges and fees of a personal pension. There's usually an annual management charge on pension pots, which can seriously erode the value of your pension pot. But as I plan to hold that pension pot for up to 10 years until I reach the state pension age of 66, the charges wouldn't have too much time to rack up. My main concern is where I would put the funds that I was saving into this new pension pot. A stock market-based pension fund has the potential for growth and loss. So I could do well in that, but because I'm not really looking at investing over a very long term, difficult to decide. But if I put the pension pot into a cash-based fund, I'd earn a pitiful rate of interest, which in our experience doesn't even cover the annual management charge. However, at the moment, because inflation is low, perhaps not earning much interest is not so bad as other times when inflation is a lot higher. But really, again, I'm wishing that there was an index-linked pension fund which would maintain the spending power of my pension pot. Wish I could put money into this and it would increase by, I would obviously rather have retail price index inflation than CPI, consumer price index, because RPI is usually higher. So even in a period where it was 0% or even deflation of say 0.03 or 0.05, I wouldn't mind that. What would be more important to me was I was maintaining the spending value of my pension pot until I started to take the money from it. At present, many income drawdown schemes where you're just taking a bit of income which is flexible according to how much you want to take each year do have pretty hefty fees to set them up and to for each withdrawal. I'd plan to just make one withdrawal per year near the end of the tax year, especially if I was still working, to see how much I could take from the pension pot as income drawdown without going over my threshold, so I wouldn't pay any tax on it. But looking at all of this, maybe it would be more straightforward to forget about a new pension and stick to putting any extra money into a cash ISA, which wouldn't have any setup, management or withdrawal fees. Plus, it would allow tax-free withdrawals and just forget about the tax relief on pension contributions. I don't feel I can make a decision on whether to restart saving into a pension pot until I have more information about possible new pension products with lower annual management charges which offer cheap, flexible access to your pension pot. But really, this just illustrates how difficult it is to do pension planning because the goalposts keep changing. I thought by the time I reached my 55th birthday when I planned to buy an annuity to have a guaranteed income for life, that at that stage I had paid 30 years national insurance contributions, which at that time would entitle me to a full state pension. But then it was changed from 30 to 35 years, so wow. Pay another 5 years national insurance contributions. And now that the pension situation has changed, here's me looking at starting a new pension. So you have to be you have to plan, but you also have to be flexible because things keep changing. And just today, I read on the BBC website that the government looks as though they're going to go ahead with trying to set up some kind of second-hand annuities market where if you have bought an annuity which gives you a guaranteed income, you can sell that annuity for a lump sum. Now, that could be a good deal if you don't live for long, and it could be a bad deal if you live for a long time and the money that you get for cashing in your annuity doesn't last. It's a minefield. I'm interested in finance. I've done a lot of reading and I'm still totally flummoxed by it. And next, I'll talk about why I think that the 0% rate of income tax on savings is unfair. The 10% starting rate of income tax on savings is being abolished. From the 6th of April 2015, if your total income from all sources, including wages, benefits, pensions and interest on savings, is less than your personal allowance, plus £5,000, you can register to receive tax-free interest from your savings accounts. So this means that you wouldn't pay tax, you would just get the interest gross, which is good because you get it more quickly. But as long as you reclaim, or like me, because I'm self-employed, fill out an annual tax form, you would get any tax back, but you would have to wait until the end of the tax year, until you got the refund, rather than just getting the whole amount of interest in your hands when the interest is paid. Now, to give an example, the personal allowance for the tax year starting on the 6th of April is going to be £10,600. So let's say you earn £5,600 from a part-time job, £5,000 from a pension, and £5,000 from interest on your savings. That'd come to an income of £15,600, which is equal to your personal allowance, £10,600 plus £5,000. This would mean that you could register to receive your savings account's interest tax-free. You would have to fill out a form for each account you've got. Even if you aren't eligible to receive all your savings interest tax-free, you can claim back some of the tax paid as long as some of your savings income falls within £5,000 on top of your personal allowance. For example, you could earn £7,500 from a part-time job, £6,000 from a pension, and £5,000 interest on savings, giving you a total income of £18,500. You'd be able to claim 20% tax back on the first 2,100 of savings income. As your earnings of 7,500, plus your pension of 6,000, and the first 2,000 of your savings income equals 15,500. However, if you have higher earnings, say from a part-time job and from a pension, and say just 3,000 in savings income, which came to a total income of 18,600, you couldn't reclaim any tax on your savings income, as your income from other sources, that is your employment and pension, comes to more than 15,600. Now, Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs state that this tax regime is to provide support to the lowest earners. In my opinion, it's definitely aimed at pensioners, to allow them to get a fair amount of interest from savings without paying tax. I'm not convinced that the 0% income tax on savings policy is logical, as everyone can now save up to £15,000 a year into a cash ISA and pay no tax on the interest received. So, put it in a nicer wrapper, you won't have to pay tax anyway. Personally, I really can't see the justification for someone working full-time, that is 40 hours a week on the minimum adult wage of 631, who'd earn 13,125 a year with a personal allowance of 10,600, having to pay income tax at the basic rate of 20% on £2,525 of their pay, when a person over the state pension age with the same total income of 12,625, but with 2,625 of that income from savings, wouldn't have to pay any income tax. That just isn't fair. Surely you should have whatever the source of your money, especially for low-paid people on the minimum wage, which isn't enough to live on anyway. Why should they have to pay tax when somebody with savings is exempt from tax? In any case, I reckon that many people won't be aware that they could register to receive their savings income tax free or receive partial refunds. It's not that easy to understand this tax policy. It's not as bad as pensions, but still not exactly straightforward. And if people don't either register and fill out annual tax returns, they won't benefit from the 0% tax on savings income, and that could be the very people who could benefit most from it. Honestly, UK tax, pensions, policy, whatever, it really needs to be simple so people can understand it. And I think it would be a lot fairer and simpler for the personal allowance to be higher for everyone, regardless of the source of income. If everybody had a could earn tax-free a year, 15,600, then there wouldn't be any need for this complicated policy that seems to be aimed at pensioners. Now a look at the massive variation on savings on Expedia Secret Savers hotels. When I was invited to an Experian event in London, which involved an overnight stay, I thought that I'd like to extend my time in the capital. I really don't like going down to London just for one night, too much time spent travelling from Berwick-upon-Tweed. However, me extending the stay in London was dependent on finding accommodation in London that was reasonably priced, which can sometimes be a real feat in London, depending how far in advance you book and if it's a peak time of year. As I'd previously used lastminute.com's top secret hotels, where the name of the discounted hotel is only revealed once you've made the non-refundable booking, I had a look there, but there was nothing promising in the search results from Last Minute. I thought I'd have a look at the similar Expedia Secret Savers hotels, and I was amazed to find a 3-star hotel in the Ealing Chiswick area for £19 a night, including breakfast, for a Saturday and Sunday night stay. The location, certainly a bit far out from the city centre, didn't deter me, as I like to explore London off the beaten track. I really thought that £19 a night, including breakfast, might be an error, so I decided I better book immediately. I was delighted when the hotel was revealed as the Holiday Inn Express London Park Royal, close to Northampton Tube Station. I've always found rooms at the Holiday Inn Express to be of a good standard. While I wouldn't rave about the breakfast at the Holiday Inn Express, it's something to eat. There's cereals, yogurts, cheeses, toast, croissants, better than nothing. Using the hotel's combined price comparison site, I did a search for the price of the Holiday Inn Express London Park Royal for these two nights. It costs £68 a night on several travel websites, including Holiday Inn Express's own site. Now that's an impressive saving of almost 70%. Having spent a lot less than anticipated on two nights accommodation, I decided to see if I could find a good deal for a further two nights. I wanted to find something a bit nearer the centre of London, as there was a German tourist board event which I could attend for my travel blog on the Tuesday evening. I also quite like to be able to walk to King's Cross Station for my train back to Berwick-upon-Tweed, not thinking, oh, how long do I have to leave to get across London, because when you've bought a cheap train ticket, it's for a specific train, so if you miss that train and have to pay the full fare for the next one, it's going to be really bad. I was aware that a weekday stay, especially near the centre of London, would probably be more expensive. Using the hotel's combined price comparison site, I identified the 3-star Comfort Inn Edgware Road as a possible. It was priced at £44 a night, including breakfast, on an advance non-refundable rate. The hotel doesn't get great reviews, especially for the public areas, but the room sounded okay. The most central hotel which I could find on Expedia Secret Savers cost £42 a night and was described as a 3-star hotel including breakfast in the Maida Vale Queen's Park area. I thought there was a good chance that this secret hotel was the Comfort Inn Edgware Road. As I would have been happy to stay anywhere within the Maida Vale Queen's Park area, I decided to take the chance. Now, this was not going to be a good saving, because if it did turn out to be the Comfort Hotel in Edgware Road, I would save £4. But I thought, well, maybe it's not that hotel, maybe get a better hotel which had a higher guest rating. Perhaps Holiday Inn Express in that area would have been great. Upon booking the Expedia Secret Saver Hotel, my feelings were correct. It was revealed as the Comfort Inn Edgware Road, with a saving of a measly 4.5% over booking it as a named hotel, compared to the almost 70% that I had saved on the Holiday Inn Express out in Rudlacton. So it is amazing to see the massive difference in potential savings varying from 4.5% to 70%. Pot luck. But definitely worth looking at when you're booking hotels. And I've been able to pretty accurately guess in most cases with the secret hotels which hotel I'm booking at. And it's always turned out to be okay. It's just the savings that are questionable. And you also have to watch out for a rather bumped up original price to make the savings sound more convincing, especially in hotels that don't have standardised rooms. Because if you go there, you know, booking through the hotel direct, I think they're more inclined to give you a good room. If you book through a third party, especially at a low rate, they could give you one of the worst smaller rooms at the back of the hotel or something. Now, finishing off with a way to possibly make £125, as the Halifax is paying £125 switching bonus to existing and new current account customers. Now, I was under the impression that in order to qualify for switching bonuses, you had to open a new current account with a provider offering the incentive. However, I read that for applications received by the 5th of April 2015, that the Halifax was paying a £120 switching incentive to existing and new holders of their standard, reward and ultimate reward current accounts, who switch another current account into their Halifax current account. In order to qualify for the incentive, you need to use the Halifax Current Account Switch Service, which will transfer all the active credits and debits from the account that you're going to switch, and it will close the old account. You won't get the £125 bonus if you received a switching bonus for a Halifax bank account at any point since January 2012, or if the account from which you switch is held with the Bank of Scotland, which is part of the same banking group. I find it very straightforward to complete the switching form on the Halifax website. I receive progress updates by text message. The £125 switching incentive was credited to my current account 2 days after the completion of the switch. If you don't have a Halifax current account, I'd recommend the Reward account. As long as you can pay in at least £750 a month, you stay in credit, and you have a minimum of 2 active direct debits, you'll receive a bonus of £5 net of basic rate income tax per month. So that's the end of this edition of the My Money podcast from Help Me to Save. You can read all our articles in full on the website at www.helpmetosave.com. You can subscribe to the My Money podcast in iTunes. So thanks for listening, and do join me again soon. Goodbye.